In our walk with the Lord, there is always something present right now and also something that draws us to the next thing. It is both. Okay? Whenever we encounter the Lord, there is something that draws us, that something that is right there. There is an experience of presence right here, and there is something going forward. You've got a today, here, and now, but you're never allowed to just hang out there. You can't just stay where you are. You're not allowed to hang out on the mountaintop. Look at the next slide. We are not to enjoy the present moment with the Lord in such a way that we fail to hear his call onward. Yet our eyes are not to be focused on the horizon in such a way that we miss the present moment where God also is. Again, it is both. We have to enjoy the moment and live in that moment that is so amazing. But we can't forget that we're called to do something else. But we can't be so focused on what our task is that we ignore the fact that we're with God. It's both. Okay? So, when we have these experiences, we have to be mindful of the fact that God is giving us a double blessing. We have to think of what we ought to have done were we Peter, James, and John on the Mount of the Transfiguration. We ought to have been thinking, this is an incredible experience. This is amazing. What are we to do next? Not can we stay here forever? What are we supposed to do with this? When we have these amazing experiences, and I'm sure that we've all had mountaintop experiences, whether it was in a Tres Arroyos or some kind of retreat, or whether it was I don't know where it's been, but I know we've had experiences where we've been really close to God. And the temptation is, I want to stay here. But God calls us onward. And for me, this is one of those things where this is like core to this. And I think, especially in the resurrection, when you see Jesus and he encounters people, they have this wonderful experience, and he's with them, and he's present, and it's ecstatic, and he says, now do this. And I think that's how our encounters with Jesus are now. We have a great thing, a great experience with him, and he says, all right, you've been blessed. Now go. You can't just hang out here. You have to do something. I think that it is both is essential. He's with us, and he calls us onward. So when you have those experiences, live the moment, but be mindful that you have that moment as part of an experience to bless you and send you outward. Mary had that moment to invigorate her and enthuse her so that she could go tell the apostles what they needed to hear, in spite of the fact that they didn't believe her. Keep in mind that Mary Magdalene didn't even recognize the gardener as Jesus, right? She turns around, the gardener's standing there. Sir, where have you taken him? Please tell me. I'll go get him. You don't have to carry him back here. You just tell me where they've taken him and I'll get him. So why didn't she get him? Well, she was not expecting Jesus to be there. You ever open up the fridge and not be able to find the ketchup because it's right in front of you? The ketchup is supposed to be in the door, not on the shelf right in front of you. That's where the eggs go. When the ketchup is where the eggs are, you can't see the ketchup because that's where the eggs belong. Anybody have that problem? Okay, good. It's not just me. All right. Well, Jesus wasn't supposed to be standing there. He was dead. You don't expect a dead man to be standing in front of you. A couple years ago, actually it was several years ago now, I walked into a bowling alley and somebody greeted me by name. And I stared at him. And I must have stared at him for a long time with a very confused look on my face. Because he finally said, "Your doctor?" I was like, "Oh, right. The guy has only been my family physician for like, you know, 10, 15 years." Okay? Context was everything. I had only ever seen the guy in the doctor's office. Seen him in the bowling alley. I had no idea who the guy was. He had a lab coat on. I had no idea who the guy was. It was completely embarrassing. Number two, she was overwhelmed with grief. She was overwhelmed with grief. And when you're in that kind of an emotional state, stuff slips by. Number three, she was in a panic. She thought somebody had come in and stolen the body of her loved one. Stolen the body of her Lord. What was she, I mean, how was she supposed to react? She was in a panic. I'm sure that some of you have been in a place where you get that phone call and it's an emergency and something happens and the next thing you know, you have run out of the house and done something completely moronic. You run out of the house, lock the door, and get to the car and realize you've just locked your keys in the house. Or something equally foolish that you never do, but you were in such a panic that you didn't even think about it. And then the fourth answer that Kenan Pearson gives is that Jesus was in his resurrection body. We don't know exactly what that means, but we know it was different. We know that people who probably could have recognized him didn't. We know that let's use the word fuddled some people. We'll think about the road to Emmaus and see that Jesus walked with the two disciples on the road to Emmaus for a long time, carrying on an in-depth conversation with them, and they didn't get it until he did something unique with them. They didn't get it. So there must, and we know that his body was different. Obviously it was recognizable, but there was something different about it. So, and I'm going to add either, maybe it's a first reason, maybe it's a fifth reason. It was dark. You know, it was dark out. It was still dark out. So, but eventually she does recognize him. And how does she recognize him? There are few things in life more precious than hearing our names uttered by a familiar voice. There's power, comfort, hope, and assurance in the moment. Though his body was now different, we assume Jesus' voice was the same. The same voice that had commanded seven devils to come out of her is the voice that calls her by name by the tomb. The sheep know the voice of the shepherd, and Mary knew his. That's just beautiful. That's just wonderfully written. Kenan Pearson is quoting a gentleman named Harry Griffith. He had had several conversations via email with this gentleman, and this is just good stuff. The same voice that had cast seven demons out of her was the same voice that called to her by name. The sheep know the voice of the shepherd, and Mary knew his voice. And that is good. That is That is just beautiful writing right there. That is poetry. Canon Pearson talks about what Christianity is at this point. And he has 4 points about what Christianity is. He says, Christianity is theological truths and a personal faith. He says it's absolutely about who God is, but it's also about who God is in relation to us. He says it's also, number two, obedience to moral law, but it's also love of God and love of neighbor. So that you can't act like it's not about obedience to a set of moral codes. You can't look at the Ten Commandments, look at the Sermon on the Mount, and say it's not about behaving yourself. But you also can't listen to Jesus' commandments and say it's not about loving God and loving your neighbor. The one thing where he sort of drops the this but that format is when he goes to number three. He says it's a call to help the least, the lost, and the lonely, but also, or and also, no, it's just, it is this. And the actual paragraph where he talks about this in the book, he's very structured, and he says it's this and this. Except when he gets to this third point, it is a call to help the least, the lost, and the lonely. There's no contrast there. It's unabashed. It's this. And finally, fourth, it's collective. It's about the church and how we work and grow together, but it's also personal and how we have an individual relationship with God and also with each other. So it is very individual, and it's also very communal. And he talks about how important a personal relationship is with God. And this is where, based on your background and your upbringing, his language may be very, very difficult for you. And he says some people don't want a personal relationship with Jesus, and he gives 3 reasons. The first reason is they do not know who God really is. If you were raised thinking that God is very distant and you don't understand the nature of Jesus and his willingness to reach out, to descend, to empty himself, to live and die as one of us, for us, to suffer for us, and you think of God as someone who's very distant, someone who's all-powerful, if you're a deist who believes that God is the clockmaker who puts everything in order, gives it a little flick, and then lets it go and sits back and watches, you may have a very hard time with this idea of a personal relationship with God. The second reason is they believe a personal relationship with God is presumptuous. Okay? Asking God to go out for coffee is just a wee bit too informal for some people. After all, you're talking about the person who created the heavens and the earth and all the cosmos with their vast array of stars and planets and everything in all of their place. Hey, Jesus, how you doing today? Latte? Maybe a bit much. Actually, there is a really amusing webcomic that I enjoy called Coffee with Jesus. If you're online, you can look it up. It's you can look it up under, the producer is someone who goes by the handle of Radio Free Babylon. You can find that amusing if you choose, whatever. It's called Coffee with Jesus. They do a daily daily comic strip, all these different people who have coffee with Jesus in their little, about a 4-panel little comic strip. Tends to be really, really witty. He's gotten a little lame over the last couple issues, but there's some times where it's really, really good. Third, they want to avoid relationships which will cause them to be wounded. They've been wounded in relationships before, and they don't want to subject themselves to any more wounds or hurts. This is especially true with people who've been particularly grievously wounded by their fathers in the past and want to avoid any more such wounds by anyone who would go by the name Father now. Okay? So, if you're trying to witness to someone who is like, no personal relationship, that's just silly, you may be dealing with somebody who is dealing with one of these. And you may need to try and overcome one of these ways or one of these stumbling blocks. They may be dealing with, it may not be an issue of theology. It may be, they have some really deep hurts in their background that they need to be, very nurturingly dealt with. Or they may need to really be shown who God really is. Or they just may need some time about, an explanation of what it is to have a prayer life with a God who's concerned for them. And of course, if anybody was able to have a copy of the book and was reading it, you know that Canon Pearson had me by the time he took a large block quote from C.S. Lewis and included it here. He quoted C.S. Lewis saying, "A man who was merely a man and said the sort of things that Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would be either a lunatic on a level with a man who says he is a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else he is a madman, or something worse. But let us not come to him with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to." Ironically, about 3 days before I read this passage, I saw an interview on YouTube with the lead singer from U2, Bono, who basically paraphrased this argument from C.S. Lewis. The long and the short of it is, for centuries, people have tried to say, "Oh, Jesus was a great moral teacher." Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, they both tried to say, divinity, who knows about that nonsense, but he was a great moral teacher. Let's look at all the wonderful things that he said. Okay? And C.S. Lewis basically said, "Nonsense. Hogwash. You can't say he was a great moral teacher. The man walked around saying he was God." Okay? No. Okay? You can say he might have said some nice things, but the guy said he was God. You can't be a great moral teacher and walk around saying you're God. That guy is either a lunatic or on the level with a man who says he is a poached egg, or else he's a devil from hell. But you can't be a great moral teacher and walk around saying you're the creator of heaven and earth.